It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland joining Daniel Pryor today on the Sound Mind broadcast here on KCIS. Good afternoon, Daniel.
And good afternoon, Mark and listeners.
We last week did kind of opened up a huge can of worms with overcoming temptation. And we came to the opinion that a lot of it has to do with renewing the mind. We're actually going to explore that more this week, renewing the mind, the narrative, and the neurological experience.
The narrative is in the mind, of course, and we've talked about that, and then the neurological experience is in the brain. So what I wanted to talk about today has to do more with kind of some of the disorders that people have, and actually I had was thinking about PTSD because that has actually come up a number of times in the past a couple of weeks.
In your own counseling sessions?
In my own counseling sessions, yeah. And in my own counseling sessions and actually just friends and acquaintances. There's a lot of diagnosis in the DSM-5 and the ICD-10 that people kind of latch on to. Well, maybe a doctor or a psychologist or apply one of these, or sometimes people are actually guessing, maybe I've got this, maybe I've got that diagnosis or that disease or that illness or something. And so we kind of pull these things down as though they are kind of a different reality for us, other than just realizing that they don't change my reality. It's just a name that I can have to put over the top, but it doesn't change my process, and it doesn't change the reality of how what I have to do to solve this. And so all of these diagnoses, so just read some off these. We'd be talking about PTSD. We'd be talking about the adjustment disorders. We'd be talking about obsessive compulsive disorder. We'd be talking about phobias, dissociative disorders, which we all have some dissociation, trying to avoid unpleasant experiences by just not showing up or something. And then the extreme of that is what they would have called multiple personality disorder, is extreme dissociation. These would include eating disorders, sleeping disorders, any addiction of any kind, behavioral disorders, even depression. A lot of times when people are diagnosed with depression, their symptoms are really actually anxiety. That's most of the time, I guess, technically speaking, if people were just depressed, they wouldn't go for counseling because they wouldn't be worried about their depression. And that's anxiety, you see. So people typically go for help because of anxiety, not depression.
Mm-hmm. But the common denominator in all of these, you say, is fear and shame.
Yeah, fear and shame. So it doesn't matter what placard, we put over, or you know, what diagnosis, that there's an underlying reality of fear and shame. And of course, we know, we've talked about how to deal with fear and shame in very general terms, is we have to grow our world. We're pursuing, you know, value, control, and power. Fear and shame, fear is the fear of loss of value, control, and power. Shame is an internalized message of lack of worth. And the reason we say that all of these things, the common denominator, the lowest common denominator, is fear and shame, is because fear and shame have to do with my security and survival, and that really is the fundamental issue in human existence, or any cognitive thinking animal. Even in lower animals, the brain is wired to help the body survive. So,
and that's not a bad thing necessarily.
No, it's
no. I mean, that's God and God ordained.
Yeah,
survival of the fittest. We hear that term.
Yeah. So when we say fear and shame, we're not talking about, you shouldn't be ashamed of shame and you shouldn't be afraid of fear.
Right. Okay.
These are things that, it's just kind of marks our awareness, you know, in shame. I think the root of shame is probably that we understand that there's a transcendent being, that's good and holy. Mm. What do I mean by good and holy? Well, good meaning, things that are, you know.
And that seems to be written on the heart. The Bible talks about that. That seems to be true of every culture.
A measure of faith. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That we have that comprehension mm-hmm. that there's a transcendent. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to go into that theologically and break that down, or philosophically and break it down, although it can be done. So what we want to do is we want to try to create and assign a narrative for neurological experience.
That's kind of a big term. What do you mean by a narrative for a neurological experience?
It's a way of integrating the mind and the brain in a realistic way, because the mind has the narrative. The brain doesn't have the narrative. When we talk about the brain functioning, the brain is just an automatic, just functions automatically.
Physical organ.
Yeah, just a physical organ. And mm-hmm. if there hasn't been physical damage to it, then it just functions automatically to keep the body alive. And so if sometimes the brain, I can associate a narrative regarding keeping the body alive. I can say, I've got to rob that drugstore and come up with some money. And the brain doesn't have a moral guide. And so if through that narrative, I can help the brain associate a pleasant or a preferred neurological experience with robbing grocery stores, that can become a habitual behavior. Mm. So assigning the narrative, creating a narrative that is a godly narrative, that is a biblical narrative, that is a healthy narrative, and helping assigning that narrative to neurological experiences so that the brain and the mind are integrated in a godly way.
And the way the Bible refers to this is the renewing of the mind.
Renewing of the mind, mm-hmm. which implies the renewing of the brain as well.
So yeah. It implies that the mind needs to be renewed. Mm-hmm. The mind is fallen. Mm-hmm. And we're not able to do that. This is where, again a big philosophical issue, spiritual issue, but the whole idea of man is fallen, mm-hmm. and we are kind of captive to sin until we become a Christian. And we got the Holy Spirit living in mm-hmm. us, and God helps us by the Spirit-led life to renew that mind mm-hmm. with His help.
Yeah, and the scripture that comes to mind as you're saying that, Mark, is work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, knowing that it's God that works in you both to will and do of His good pleasure. Yeah, we are fallen, and we're in the process of working out our salvation, mm-hmm. which is synonymous with renewing our mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take, for example, PTSD. PTSD is a neurological experience that's associated with a mental narrative. So someone will say, I have PTSD because, and here comes the narrative, when I was young, this happened, or because when I was in the service, this happened. So there's the narrative that's associated with a neurological experience, an unpleasant neurological experience. Now, what you need to do then is rework that narrative. So what happened was an event took place and a narrative was created. That's the next step. And the narrative often includes more than just the actual facts. It can include conceptions of the facts. Take, for example, a building caught fire. And that was the fact, the building caught fire. The conception about that could be that fires always cause death, or fires are always horrible, terrible things. And then there could be an emotional aspect to it of that. The building caught fire because I was in a certain place in that building.
Maybe even worse, I set the building on fire.
Yeah,
could be. Even more personal shame.
Yeah, so beliefs, concepts. So these things are added to the actual facts. So a narrative is created, and that narrative is associated with the neurological experience, which we're calling PTSD. Now, any future event that triggers a similar neurological experience. So now it could be being in an elevator because I was in an elevator when the building caught fire. So now I'm in an elevator. So that's a similar experience. So it triggers that similar neurologic experience, and it can remind me now of the original narrative of the fire. Mm. So that results in a secondary experience, Now I'm now re-experiencing the fire, and I'm now associating it with all elevators.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now the next thing that happens is, or recalling, I can recall the primary narrative event, which was the fire in the building, and that can trigger an neurological experience then that is continually being associated with an increasing number of other narratives or events.
Mm.
So not only does this elevator that I'm in remind me of the elevator I was in when the building caught fire, but if I think of the building catching fire, it now reminds me of all elevators. And so now elevators or small rooms or things are now beginning to be part of that original narrative. So it just is kind of an increasing thing.
Well, you can see where then this is obviously leads to just phobias, too, just specific fears people have. You mentioned the elevator. The remember, my mom had really struggled with claustrophobia of being in an enclosed space. And I remember going to Disneyland and we were in some hallway. It got more narrower and narrower and dark, and there wasn't any windows. And she had a kind of a panic attack from claustrophobia. Yeah. So I would assume claustrophobia is, again, one of these kinds of problems.
Yeah, yeah, any of those. Our family was at Disneyland many, many years ago. Took our daughter down there, and we were at Universal Studios, and they had this ride where a group of people, maybe 30 people, were on kind of a bleacher affair that was kind of on wheels and springs and hinges and motorized, and then they had this great big screen that was like kind of concave, and so you're sort of sitting inside the screen looking around, so this is virtual happening all around you. And it was one of these Back to the Future things where they're chasing the bad guys down through these canyons at light speed, and I began to panic. Now there was a narrative that was going on in my mind, and that narrative had to do with just a realization. It wasn't just facts. There were some facts, and then there were some concepts and things, but it had to do with the fact that things go wrong with mechanical things. And so the first part of the narrative was that I'm actually in this ride, and the fact that I'm in this ride, and now that I'm in the ride, and that this is actually the virtuality is become a reality, we could actually hit these mountains because things don't always go right. So this narrative started to be developed, and I'm like having this panic attack. And the only thing I could do was look off to my side where there was a dark curtain, and sort of like the the wizard behind the curtain,
beachhead in reality.
Yeah, the guy running the machine. And so while everybody was screaming and yelling, I was just watching this guy push buttons and do levers, and I was fine.
Yeah, but you weren't connecting that to a previous experience of yours that was traumatic. This
I was connecting it to a narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I could have changed the narrative. If I worked hard, I could have changed the narrative by talking myself through that and saying, these bleachers that you're on really aren't moving very much, maybe 3 inches one way or another. They're really not moving.
Well, that's a whole interesting study maybe in itself of virtual reality and the ways that technology can fool the brain just by some of the rides they have now.
Yeah.
Are amazing.
I'm coming off like a sissy here. And I am.
But I mean, I think some of this is, it's kind of involuntary. It's an involuntary, only certain people, for instance, can handle flying an airplane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's there are G-forces and different physical things going on that will throw most people for a loop.
Yeah, plus the narrative that things can go wrong in airplanes, and so we start to develop a story about how this didn't turn out very well.
There's a lot of mental conditioning that goes with these different traumas that is necessary. Very interesting subject this week, the narrative and the neurologic experience. This is Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. Perhaps somebody is dealing with something not quite so involved, but they need some help, maybe how to get along in their marriage or with their kid. And you can provide help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. And also have people email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
We'll be back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with a word regarding the many faces of anger. The key to managing anger is to recognize it when it doesn't look like anger. Otherwise, we find ourselves resisting anger when it wears one face, but then embracing it when it wears another. From personal experience and professional training, I understand this. I can help you recognize the faces of anger and teach you tools of effective management. Contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, or call 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along for the ride today as well, as we were talking about Disney,
the ride,
Disney
yeah.
rides and
there you go. Sure.
How those can, we got to get a stronger mental narrative going so we can handle some of those ups and downs and rides. But interesting subject. I think God has made a wonderful, our brains are amazing equipment. And one of the things you might talk about here in this second half as well is the way the brain does help you deal with traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. Some ways, again, that was designed by God. For instance, we talked before we went on the air, the idea of the multiple personality. Sometimes somebody has had terrible trauma as a child, and they've been able to compartmentalize and develop different personalities to deal with a trauma. And that's obviously a very extreme example, but it's a kind of, it can kind of seem weird and spooky, but it's actually kind of an amazing self-protection, again, a survival mechanism that God has put into the brain.
That whole idea of what we call dissociation could be used as a very broad term. I actually knew a psychiatrist who, the longer he was in the field, the more he was convinced that dissociation could be diagnosed with for everybody that comes in, because in a way we are, as you said, trying to figure out ways and devise ways of dealing with unpleasantness. I've been reading The City of God, St. Augustine, and great big book, 800 pages, and I'm just getting into it. And but he's trying to sell a difficult package here. He's writing in part, in the beginning of the book, he's writing to people who are being sold into slavery, tossed to the lions, burned at the stake, and he's saying
traumatic experiences.
Traumatic experiences, and he's saying, "Hey, this isn't all that bad." I mean, those aren't. He's not saying that, but it sounds like he's saying that he's you know, kind of look on the bright side.
But by the renewing of the mind, you can handle even such awful things as that.
Now. And you know, the idea of, you know, should you commit suicide to try to avoid some of these things? And he's going into some of these really serious, hard questions. And my thinking is, that's definitely a hard sell. But one of the things that's coming out of that is, the reality that I can create a different narrative about some very, very difficult situations and renew my mind and think of another way of thinking about that. We chatted a little bit about medication because a lot of people come in, when they come in with these things that we've named off, these PTSD, adjustment disorders, you know, OCD and the phobias and et cetera, et cetera. A lot of times there's a medication. What's the medication actually doing? Well, the medication is attempting to alter the neurologic experience. That's all it's trying to do.
The chemistry.
Yeah, the chemistry. Mm-hmm. And so the problem is that unless you also change the narrative that's associated with that neurologic experience, your brain is going to recreate that same neurologic experience because you're not dealing with the reason that neurologic experience is fastened to the story, in a way of putting it, again, with PTSD. Something happened, a neurological experience took place, and a narrative is growing that's associated with that. And they reinforce each the other. The narrative can bring about the neurologic experience. Neurologic experience can bring about the narrative. I can take a medication which will physically alter or block the neurologic experience. But if I don't also change the narrative, then without the medication, the mind will always be trying to recreate the same neurologic expression or a worse one. Mm. So we do have to work on the narrative. We have to renew the mind.
That sounds like that's most experience, most problems are associated with an experience that you're trying to change through your behavior. What about, though, real chemical problems, real brain problems, like more extreme things like schizophrenia, where medicine has done wonders to help that? Because it's not something that they didn't have one experience that caused schizophrenia. I mean, it's something that their chemistry is off from when they were born.
And talking about schizophrenia, that is specifically, schizophrenia is almost quite a bit about the narrative, because they're the fact that they can't organize their thinking recreates the generates that frightened sense and that unpleasant neurologic experience. And when they're treating schizophrenia, usually it's quite often an inpatient situation where they're teaching them to control their thinking, control their behavior, and actually to change the narrative. It's a very slow process. But yeah, they do use medication. And I want to be clear that if medication is to alter the neurologic experience, it certainly does that. And so, and with a lot of people, the realities, the narratives, let's say the mental narratives, are so deeply rooted that it is very difficult and takes a long time to get those changed. And there are people that are highly functioning people in society. They don't have to be in a hospital, highly functioning people that have, you know, it's probably some people running for president that have some personality problems tied to some, you know, early childhood stuff. So, you know, you don't have to be, you know, completely off the tracks to have that going on. But again, and so medication actually does alter that neurologic experience. And for a lot of people, that's the break they might need in order to go back and help them change the narrative. Because if they're panicking, they're not going to be able to do that. So a lot of times medication will do that. So what I'm saying is, but ultimately, the narrative has to be changed or the brain will just keep doing what it's doing. So I've got to associate a different narrative.
Well, let's say as we kind of close down the show here today, we want to recreate the narrative to affect a different neurological experience. Tell us kind of some basic solutions here.
And this is certainly not an exhaustive list, but it's and it's not just a Band-Aid. We need to. These are real things that we do to make this change. One of the things that we can do as Christians is acknowledge God's sovereignty. And again, this is not a platitude. It's something that involves prayer, the word, fellowship, that the armor of God that we talked about in the last week. Not platitudes, but active things. Putting on the girdle of truth is not a platitude, it's a lifestyle. So recognizing God's sovereignty, recognizing God's promise, recognizing and acknowledging God's plan in my life. And so that takes not only it takes fellowship, being in communion with God, being in fellowship, and
because what often when somebody's struggling with these things, they are isolating. Mm-hmm. They don't want a fellowship, and
exactly,
so it's
right.
like they have to force themselves, and it's healthy to whether it's a support group of some kind or just being around people. Acknowledge, this is an isolating experience I'm having, but. You've got to be with it. You heal in relationship. That's what you've turned. You've talked about this as being growing your world.
That's coming up here. Growing your world in pursuing challenges or industries. Remember that the armor of God goes on the front of my body, not on the back of it. Mm-hmm. So, pursuing industry, pursuing relationship, is our way of growing our world and ensuring our sense of value and choice and power. Those things that are. Fundamental to the mind and moving forward toward hope instead of living in the past. Again, not a platitude, but an actual, you know, nuts and bolts. Moving toward hope means, you know, more time with God, more time in prayer, more time in fellowship, more time back to the first one, acknowledging God's sovereignty, his promise, his plan, which means obviously, I have to be aware of those. I've got to be reading what those are. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, again, the armor of God and changing the narrative by things like looking for the good. Philippians 4:8 talks about, you know, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, pure, lovely, of good repute. We're supposed to be thinking on those things, and that's a deliberate act of thinking. So again, you know, not a platitude, but an active,
actively changing the narrative, as you say, changing the narrative. Well, these are great ways to deal with the anxieties and fears that we have. I think that was interesting. You said most people who come in for help with depression is really what they're coming in is to help me with my anxieties. I'm fearful of my fear. I'm anxious about my anxiety.
Yeah. There's a at least an 85, I don't know if it's still 85 or more, but 85% comorbidity between depression and anxiety, which means that 85% of the time it's anxiety, which is why we go in for help to begin with. If there were no anxiety, I can't picture a person going in for depression. They have to worry about it to go in.
Well, the mind and the brain, interesting dynamic there, and we can renew the mind. And to help maybe with some renewing of your mind, if you need help in your relationships, maybe a marital situation, a family situation, perhaps a phobia, an addiction that you can't seem to lick, Mr. Daniel Pryor can help you. He is a life coach and counselor with offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. Mm-hmm. And how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
You can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 778-6169. And people also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
All your shows are podcast at that website as
That's
well.
That's right.
Past broadcasts, mm-hmm. BibleBasedCounselor.com. Another great Sound Mind broadcast here with Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.